G'day folks, talk to Goose McGrath. He's in the housing sector, helping people build profitable property portfolios, reducing risk and maximizing success, and where he uses his Holy Trinity formula. It's great stuff. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs. Oh yeah!
Mate, well, just want to start off with, you know, much appreciated for jumping on and having a yarn with us and just taking us through the landscape of what you do in the real estate and property entrepreneurial scene. And mate, I'm excited to have a yarn with you, Goose.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on. When you sent me a message, I was like, yeah, man, I absolutely want to talk. I mean, firstly, I'm passionate about what I do. And secondly, I love communicating and, you know, learning from other people and sharing stories and all of that kind of stuff. So this is me and my element, and I've really been looking forward to this podcast with you. So yeah, thanks for having me on.
Beautiful. Love it. Love the energy. So Goose, Glenn, if we go back to Goose, where does the nickname come from, brother?
That's an interesting story. And it's usually one that I kind of fob off a little bit because it requires visuals. But seeing as how we've got, this is a video podcast as well as an audio one. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you subscribe to Jake's YouTube channel, then you're going to be able to see this. So it's about a 5-minute story, right? You ready for that?
Bring it.
Okay, so when I was about 14 years old, I grew up in country Victoria. I live in Bondi Beach in Sydney now, but I grew up in regional Victoria. And I used to go on the weekends, used to go hang out with my mates in the big town, you know, like the big smoke, the town that had like traffic lights, you know, huge. And so on the weekends, we used to go there. We sort of started the first skate crew in that town. I went back when I was 14.
Used to skate too. Love it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We were renegades. We'd just like skate from Friday after we finished school to Sunday. Basically, we wouldn't sleep for a couple of days, just skate for days. Anyway, so we're about 14 years old, and me and my mate Jimmy were out skating on a Sunday. And he said, hey, mate, what do you want to do? I said, oh, let's go visit our friend Holly, right? So Holly lived up the hill and a little way up the way. So we said, all right, yeah, let's go see Holly. So we get on our way. We skate up to Holly's place. Now, it's country, big country town, right? It's a big front yards and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I stood out on the footpath at the end of the driveway. My mate Jimmy went up to the door. So it's 15 meters, 20 meters. Jimmy goes up onto the porch, onto the veranda, knocks on the door. Holly's older brother, Mitch, answers the door, and he opens the door, and he's looking all wild-eyed and crazy, right? He's like, oh, what's happening, man? And my mate Jimmy's like, hey, is Holly home? And he's like, no. And he's like looking at me the whole time, like looking at me all the way down the end of the driveway, not looking at Jimmy right in front of him.
Right.
And he's carrying on like this. And we're thinking, what's going on here? We're 14-year-old kids in the country, right? So we're like, what's happening here? Anyway, this went on for like sort of 5 or 10 minutes. This guy was a bit older, right? And obviously he's been having a bit of fun. Anyway, Holly gets home from wherever she was about an hour or so later, walks into the house, and she walks in the house, opens up the door, goes inside. Mitch is on the couch, her older brother's on the couch. She walks in, oh, hey, Mitch, how's it going? And he jumps up on the back of the couch. He said, some goose came looking for you, man. She said, what? You mean a guy? He said, nah. It was this goose, and it had long brown hair, and it was talking to me and shit. And it's stuck ever since.
Beautiful. Love it. That's a good start to the podcast and just the journey of Goose, mate, and where the name comes from. But the journey, where it started. So before you jumped into the property scene, so from what I understand, there was another scene that you're in, which was the music scene. Is that correct?
100% correct. Yep.
Yeah.
So we could probably take a couple of steps back, actually. So when I was growing up, I always thought that I wanted to be in sports. Like I always thought I wanted to like play soccer or something like that. I wasn't actually good enough to do
that. That's it, brother. Tell us the journey, where it all started. Let's go.
Yeah. I thought I was never actually good enough, but I like to think that I was. And then I actually had a motorbike accident and it crush fractured my T6 and T7 pretty severely.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So
Lucky boy.
Yeah, totally. So that obviously changed the course of things for me quite a lot. As I started to recover from that, I realized I wasn't going to be able to play sport. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing I was interested in was music at the time. And so part of my motivation in my recovery process, which took a while, I started organizing events and started putting on music festivals and doing all that kind of stuff. And by the time I was 17.
And was this in country Victoria still?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So we had a pretty cool scene down there, and we grew the scene, you know, like it was, we had a lot going on down there, and it was a lot of fun. But
Of music?
Well, that's a good question. So, because I did two things. So I was in bands and I used to organize events like as a promoter, right? So
nice.
In the bands, back then I was in like grindcore, heavy metal, like.
Oh, you're speaking to the soul right there. Yeah, I love that totally. Stuff. Yeah.
So I used to be the front man for a couple of grind bands and stuff like that. But we used to organize like, you know, punk and funk and whatever, right? All that kind of stuff. But then that whole journey evolved. And by the time I was 17, I was really organizing. I already knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah, because that scene's pretty big in Victoria itself when it comes to punk, hardcore and metal.
Totally. You know?
Yeah.
Well, this was quite early on. This was quite early on before it really kicked off.
Yeah, okay.
But the interesting thing was because I was in that scene and because of the way that, you know, back when that whole punk hardcore scene in Victoria really started to move, that was right about when I was, you know, just in that sort of late teens. And I left school to just basically start doing festivals full time.
Was that sort of like I Killed the Prom Queen and Carpathian, all those Victorian bands, yeah?
Totally. They all sort of came into vogue, I guess, after I'd left school. And when I was for context, I left school and then I was starting to organize festivals and events, and they were the kinds of bands that were playing at those events that I was organizing or managing or whatever once I started doing that. So we're in the sort of same bracket and doing that kind of stuff, you know, even early Parkway Drive and things like that too. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I'm just above my webcam actually, mate. I've got one of Ben Gordon's drumsticks sitting framed up in a Parkway Drive poster, mate. So love that stuff. So
awesome. Yeah,
so you're getting amongst this scene, you're playing in the bands, you're spreading the love through getting some of the events going as well. So but where does, like, you're in this scene, but how old are you before you start getting the ideas flowing, the juices flowing when it comes to property, and where did that sprawl out?
Mate, it was a long time. So I started like, you get it, basically, if you imagine, like, you know, I was 18 when I started my first real business, 17 when I started my first real business and left school and did all that kind of stuff and just pursued it full time. Yeah, it sort of really grew arms and legs for me, the whole festival and events thing. And I ended up with companies in three continents. So we used to do stuff in Asia, UK. I even did stuff in America. I didn't set up a company there, but I did like Burning Man and a whole bunch of other stuff over there.
Yeah, right.
So it was pretty big. If you can think of it, like, I've probably done it. Everything from the Olympics through to, I mean, like, you know, the biggest festivals in Australia. I organized an event for the Malaysian government for a million people attended. So it was pretty hectic, but it was a pretty fun ride, I got to say, for about 13 years. But
you're in it for a while, because that's what I was going to ask you. Is that scene, like, now you're in multiple scenes, you're talking about in Malaysia and other facets of events, like, is it pretty sustainable? Or,
well, yes and no. I mean, like, so I built a successful career in it, but the problem is, you know, you hear about the sex, drugs and rock and roll lifestyle, and, you know, it's basically true, right? True. If you're a 20 year old, let's just say you're a 25 year old, right? Let's just say you're a 25-year-old and you're flying all around the world organizing music festivals. And at that point, I'd stopped playing in bands. I was DJing and stuff, and I got into techno. So I was like DJing, organizing festivals, flying around, and it was let's just say it was fun. But I can tell you by the time I got.
Oh, you mean wild? Yeah, pretty wild,
mate. Hectic, absolutely hectic. So by the time I got to my late 20s, I was a mess. I was a wreck. I was an absolute shadow of my former self. I'd become heavily addicted to drugs. Alcohol in the ground, it kind of on the outside it seemed like life was really good. You know, I was traveling the world and doing all this cool stuff, but the reality is it was a pretty, I got myself to a pretty dark place.
And that would creep up pretty hard for fast, especially like going through, like you said, 13 years. It's pretty wild, hectic, drugs and alcohol, young bloke touring the world, you know, and then you just trying to keep up with the lifestyle. Yeah.
Totally. So I didn't have any savings. I didn't have any safety net. I didn't have anything. Mm. At the end of the day, I was living hand to mouth, and I wasn't in a good way, basically. And I was making, and I was really depressed and really, you know, like I was, is a lot of bad stuff. And that's why I was taking so many drugs and everything to try and mask all of that. And anyway, it was during that kind of period that I met my now partner, Gabby, and I got no idea what she saw in me at that point in my life, but for some reason she took a liking to me, and that was kind of the thing that saved me.
Shout out to Gabby.
Yeah, she's the best. She's the best. So, when I met her, I sort of started thinking, hang on a second, she's actually pretty awesome. And if I want to, I'd realize that my life was starting to go a way that I really didn't want it to go. And I realized that if I wanted to actually keep this girl and have a better life, I was going to have to make some changes, you know, and changes don't happen fast, right? I'd love to say, oh, I met Gabby one day and then my life was changed. And it was like, honestly, it was like 3 years or at least a couple of years of me trying to, a lot of ingrained habits, a lot of addiction, a lot of all of that kind of stuff.
And was it trying to, like, you're getting out of that addiction phase, but like a lot of self-reflect, but also trying to see what else you can tap into, like what other markets or scenes or whatever, yeah?
Mate, at that point in time, I was honestly just trying to make sense of what was going on. Like I was confused, I was lost, I was scared. I was like, it was a really challenging few years. And there's sort of it all started to come to a head a little bit. You know, I started thinking, I was working 100-hour weeks in my business. I didn't seem to be getting anywhere. We were organizing a few of our own festivals. They were failing. Like we lost millions on a couple of festivals that didn't make any money. And we didn't have millions. I was living on my office floor, right? Like I don't have that cash. So it was really challenging. And anyway, through all of that, we're still trying to make a go of it. And we're thinking, right, we're a young couple. What do young couples do when they're trying to get ahead? They go and buy a property.
Yep, that's right. You know, it's a smart and safe thing to do. And, you know, it's nothing better than having your own, you know, roof over the top of your head, mate. So, you know, I know what that feels like.
Well, that's what we thought, right? We thought. Mm. Now, at that point in time, I didn't know anything about property, right? Zero. And me and my business partner at the time, we actually said to each other, we're like, how does property work? Right? It's like, it's really simple, right? You just buy it and it doubles in value every 7 to 10 years. That's what we hear, right? Because we hear all the stories about, you know, like my mate's parents bought a property for 75 grand in Melbourne. And then at that time, it was like worth about 2.5 million or something. So we're like, oh, well, I don't know, you just buy a property and boom.
Yep.
You're rich, right?
Just throw some money at the bricks and mortar and thanks for coming.
That's what we thought. So yeah. If only it were that simple, right? If only it were that simple. So anyway, so Gabby and I thought, right, we've got to do something. We're going to make some change. I can't stay in this business. It's killing me. The hours are killing me. I'm unhappy. You know, I hadn't decided to go into this industry yet. We're trying to get ahead. Mm. So we borrowed some money. We did all that kind of stuff. And well, you know, family and friends, and we bought the wrong property in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Sydney?
Melbourne, about 2 weeks, Melbourne in 2018, about 2 weeks before it fell off a cliff.
Ooh.
So, you know, but that was awesome. It was like literally one of the better things that's ever happened to me, because it was the catalyst that kind of set me on this path to where I am now.
Yeah. And like, so you got the catalyst, you got that, And it sounds like that's a bit of the linchpin there that sort of got everything started. But was there also, like, you threw your money in the property market, that fell down, and then you're looking forward. But were there any qualifications along the way, or were you looking at to go down that path, or was it just like, I'm just going balls to the wall and giving it a crack?
Well, mate, I had no idea what I was doing, right? So we thought we knew what we were doing. We bought this property, and then pretty much instantaneously we stuffed it up. We're like, okay, wow, cool. And then I looked around and I was like, well, this, all right, clearly it's a knowledge gap, right? It's clearly there are people who make a lot of money in real estate. I said, what have we done wrong? Like, obviously, I just knew I was missing something. I was like, there's a missing piece here that I don't get, that I don't understand. And over the course of 12 months, Gabby and I invested pretty much everything we had.
Right.
Everything we had in learning and, you know, courses, mentorships, programs, you name it, books, you name it, we've done it, mate. Like, and all of that was trying to work out, it's like, how does this thing work? Like, how can you actually make it work? How can you mitigate your risk? How can you increase your upside, minimize your downside,
right? That's
and
right.
All of that kind of stuff. How can you actually make it work? And it was through that process that we basically cracked a little bit of a code, because I say that because I think there's a lot of other people who haven't cracked the code.
I like the sound of this.
Yeah. And we realized there was only three things that you ever needed to have in any property that you ever buy ever. And if you do that, you are gold, you're diamond. Right. And
is this in general, say, for your first one, or like a strategy that you would put in place for multiple properties if you were going to invest in bricks and mortar, you know?
It's literally for any stage. It's a set of principles, right?
Okay.
So buy one property. You want to buy one property? Awesome. Follow this strategy. You want to buy 10 properties? Awesome. Follow this strategy. And that's the beauty of it. It's not like it's not a cookie cutter. Kind of like just it's simple, but it's tricky. Mm-hmm. So the simplicity in it is belies its power. So very simply, it needs to be cash flow positive. Okay, yep. So it needs to produce more income than it uses. So no negative gearing. We're not talking after tax depreciation. It needs to produce more income than it uses. Simple. That's step one. It must get a lot of capital growth, right? So this is a tricky bit. How do you find the capital growth areas? But if you can get capital growth and cash flow, which a lot of people don't think you can get, but if you can get both of those things, then awesome. You got the best of both worlds. You're building your wealth. You got a second income stream. You got all this kind of stuff working for you. But then you've got to think, but what happens if the market goes sideways? What happens if there's a pandemic?
That's what I wanted to jump into. So, like, say before the pandemic, because you've been in this market for a while now, so would you follow, like, if it's online economic solutions, or you'd sort of tap into a certain area, like, okay, well, say in northern New South Wales, wherever, a new mining town's going to be established in X, Y, and Z, and the property value is going to go up. Would you sort of follow key pathways like that if it's in your local area or around the nation, or what?
Yeah, totally. So as I said, there's three key points, right? What you're touching on there is growth, right? Because cash flow is fairly easy to calculate. Like, if I rent this property out, is it going to make more money than it costs? You can work that out pretty easily. Trying to understand growth cycles is a little bit more challenging. You touched on some interesting stuff there. You said, you know, if a town in northern New South Wales is getting a new mine or something, like Narrabri, right? You know? That's a classic example.
Yes.
Prices go up. That, though, is not an example of something that we would look at, because what I kind of worked out is that you still need to be careful, right? So you hear a lot of stories about people who've lost a lot of money with mining towns too.
Yes. Where
they get in, prices go up, prices crash. Like, they're very volatile, right? So,
because I've seen it in the Hunter Valley. Like, you've had X amount of mines in there. Some are dropped out. And the property market's just a roller coaster up in that area. So,
totally. I don't know about you, but I'm not that interested in investing in roller coasters.
No, mate. You just want something that's going to go straight from Earth to the moon, or something similar anyway.
That's exactly right. So here, and you touched on something really interesting there. You want something, you don't want something that's going to go from zero to 5 over 20 years, right? Mm. It's like, yeah, I mean, stable, but you also don't want something that's going to go from 0 to 100 to 0 to 100 to 0 to 100. It's like, God, you're going to have a heart attack.
That's it. And you're not going to know whether, you know, should I sell? Should I? You just get stuck in a bit of purgatory there.
Totally. So what you actually really want is you want to go, okay, so how can I buy something that's going to give me good, strong capital growth for the long term, not just the short term? Mm. It's going to provide me a positive income stream, and also I can cushion myself just in case everything goes wrong anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But you want to go from zero, you want to go for a moonshot as quickly as you can. So if you try and invest too early in a market phase, you can end up just basically flatlining for ages, and then maybe it'll go up, I don't know, maybe 10 years away or something like that. So understanding where to position yourself in the market cycle is the most critical thing. You hear a lot of people in real estate, they'll talk about, oh, it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. Now, this is true. The more time you are in the market, the more money you will make. That's the power of compounding growth, right?
Yes, yes.
But let me just ask you this. If you could buy a $500,000 house today and it do nothing for 5 years and then go increase by 20% over the next 2 years, or just buy it right before it does the 20%, what would you choose?
Oh, you know, mate. It's easy. You know, if you're going to know, like I said, slingshot into the moon, if you're going to know something's going to have that stable growth, you're going to be going in that direction. So
100%. Mm. Yeah, so we do look at all of that kind of stuff, and it's been really interesting. I mean, we actually just did some performance reviews over our because we buy properties for clients, right? So that's what we do. So we don't sell property. We don't sell real estate. We don't do anything like that. We help people. Let's say you say, look, Goose, I want to build a property portfolio, and I'll say, well, why do you want to do that? You might say, well, mate, I want to get to $100,000 income in the next 10 years. Let's just say, right? Awesome. We'll work out a strategy, and then we'll help you go buy the properties, right? So it's very, nothing to do with sales or anything like that. So interestingly though, we were just doing some performance reviews of our clients who have purchased in over this period through the coronavirus period.
Yeah. And how often would you do it? Like the performance reviews?
Every 6 months.
Okay. Beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every 6 months. We were a little lackadaisical over the last little bit because it's been a few things going on.
COVID, a few things.
A couple of things. So we just did a review on about 25 of the properties. 25 properties that we'd purchased for our clients over a certain period of time.
Okay.
And mate, there was one guy who his first ever property that he bought, and it settled. So he took ownership over it on the 27th of March. So right when the coronavirus is really kicking off.
Oh.
How do you think he felt at that time?
Oh, mate, your heart would have been, you know, dropping out of your chest.
Totally. So I called him up yesterday. Jay is his name. I said, Jay, how's everything going? And he's in Melbourne at the moment. And he's a bit like...
And being down there.
Yeah. And the property, we didn't buy in Melbourne for his property, right? So his property was in Queensland, right?
Okay.
Properties in Queensland, but he's in Melbourne. I was like, hey, mate, how's it going? And he was really like down in the dumps, you know. He's like, oh, you know, he's locked down. And, you know, people are getting a bit flat, you know. They're locked inside. He's like, can't go 5Ks from the house. And he's a bit flat. And I said, oh, okay, well, I've got a little bit of news for you. And he said, oh, what's that? I said, well, that property you bought 5 months ago has gone up in value by 12.6%. Right? And he's like, what? During... the coronavirus pandemic. And I was like, oh, yeah, actually, during the coronavirus pandemic. And he just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, because he would have been just having that as a write-off, yeah,
pretty much. He'd pretty much written it off. Like, he was just like, ah, well, it's done, and it'll come to fruition one day. And he's just like, what? You know, he's made, you know, something like $40,000 in 5 months by doing nothing.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So the important question is, COVID... Queensland, 12 whatever percent it is, how does that come about? What's the magic there?
That's a good question. So I know what I know. So when you asked me to come on this podcast, you're like, I want to know what's going on with property, coronavirus, all of this kind of stuff, right? And there's a lot of things to unpack, right? So
compartmentalize it as best as you can, Goose.
I'm going to try and compartmentalize it as best I can. So it's not all about, it's not about Queensland. It's not about New South Wales. It's not even about Victoria, right? Because there's properties in Victoria that have done that kind of stuff as well. Mm. We've been buying over this. We'll just use this year as a microcosm, right? Just so we can keep it in frame of the coronavirus. We've been buying in five different states over this period of time. Five. And of the properties that we purchased this year, the average growth for our properties through the whole period has been 15.3%.
Really?
Now, yeah. So then you start to go, okay, so it's not just like, oh, you managed to buy in Queensland at the right time. It's like, no, we did it in five states. We did it in five states over the last 8 months or whatever it, whatever it's been. So that's then you're saying, what's the secret? So the secret is about understanding not just, well, firstly, it's by not listening to the news. That's the first piece of the
puzzle. I know. Yeah. It's like, what's really going on? No one knows. And it's like, is it fake news in Australia? Is it fake news around the rest of the world? Should you wear a mask? Shouldn't you? And now, you know, and then when it comes to bricks and mortar, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Now, if you listen to the media, they're going to be telling you property prices are crashing, vacancy rates are going up, rents are dropping, the whole world's ending, right? I can tell you that categorically, and this is not opinion, this is fact, but that is a lie. So you got to remember 17 million people live outside of Sydney and Melbourne, but the newspapers only report on Sydney and Melbourne. Now, when you look at the newspapers and stuff like that, they're telling you that, you know, property prices are crashing and blah, 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 blah. I can tell you that where there's less affordability, there is more volatility. So it is a proven fact that Sydney and Melbourne are the two most volatile real estate markets in the country, which most people don't. Everyone thinks the Cedar State is like, it's like they're dangerous markets, right?
Yeah.
They go up, they go down, they go all over the place. Now, what you need to look at is actually just look at the facts. So some of the key things you've got to look for is, you want to see vacancy rates decreasing. Now, if you don't understand what vacancy rates are, I'll quickly explain them for the benefit of the people listening to the podcast.
That'd be great, yeah.
So vacancy rates are typically the percentage of rental properties that are currently available out in the market. Right? Let's say you're in a town and there's 100 rental properties in the town. Mm-hmm. And let's say of those 100 rental properties, 10 of them are available to be rented right now. They're vacant, that'd be a 10% vacancy rate, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what is typically considered to be a balanced market, so when there's like roughly the right amount of supply for the right amount of demand in terms of rentals.
Yep, the equilibrium's all good, yep.
Yeah, totally. That's about 3% vacancy rate. So when you got 3% of the total amount of rentable properties in an area that are vacant, that's like, it's considered to be equilibrium. Mm. Now, 2% is considered to be extremely tight. As in, like, it's a bit testy. Less than 1% is considered to be crisis levels, right? So less than 1% vacancy rate, it's basically a housing crisis.
Right.
So when you look at some parts of Sydney, you've got vacancy rates that are well and truly over 10%, which is crazy. It's nuts. That means that like one in 10 properties is vacant.
Jesus.
It's mental. However,
that's pretty high.
It's extremely high, right? In the CBD, it was got up to 17%. So one of the things you want to look for if you're trying to find these kind of areas is you want to look for vacancy rates that are decreasing over a period of a few months, not just like over the last month or whatever. Right. But also you want to look for very low vacancy rates. So to give you some context around that, the areas that we've been buying in have had vacancy rates of less than 1% everywhere. So some places have had vacancy rates of 0.5%. So pretty much there's like not much rental stock on the market. So there's one
right,
thing.
Right.
So you want to have a look for vacancy rates that are declining. And you also want to see the days on market shortening. And by the days on market, I mean the average amount of days that it takes to sell a property in an area, you want to see that decreasing. Right.
And talking about this, what would be if it's someone that was ever going to engage yourself or if they were just going to do it on their own, how do they go about just seeing the landscape of, you know, the vacancy rates or whatever, the numbers going up and down?
To be honest, this is one of the trickiest parts, right? It's like, it's not black magic. There's a lot of people in real estate that will try and tell you it's all black magic and it's all smoke and mirrors. It's not, it's maths. Like it's all maths. It's all just maths and understanding. There's two components, right? It's science and human psychology or maths and human psychology. That's it.
So it sounds like you've got the algorithm.
Well, No, it's like, I mean, we do have an algorithm, right? We do. But the reality is that, like,
that's
Yeah, I mean, we've got a system that we've built.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a magician. Like, I went and built it. I didn't wish for it, and didn't come out of a cloud. It's not from another planet. You know, it's like it's human psychology and mathematics.
Okay.
So there's a couple of great resources that people can use. Like, so there's a bunch of free resources that are like world's best data at sqmresearch.com.au. You can check out vacancy rates. You can have a look at all of that kind of stuff. You can get a feel for what's going on in an area, right? So if you're going to get thinking about buying somewhere, that's a really, really great resource, and they have loads of free data that anyone can go and access.
Mm.
And that's a really awesome resource. There's another one called Microburbs, which you can just Google that. And that gives you some really great insight into like what's happening from a human level, like what's the public housing percentage, what's the livability scores, and all of this kind of stuff. But the process that you really need to do is start to overlay all these things together.
Yeah. And talking, because with overlaying all those things together, so you've got the government that they've announced with social housing and how that's going to ramp up, and you're looking at people that have lost their jobs and that they might not be able to afford living in the CBD. So then if they're building social housing out in whatever area may be, so what's the perception of that?
That's an interesting question. So I think there's two parts to it. So if you're looking at an established, I think there's two parts to it. So when they're building new social housing areas, I want to preface this by saying there's nothing wrong with social housing, right?
Mm.
Anytime that there is a new estate development, and I don't care whether it's like a mainstream developer or the government building a new social housing estate, anytime there's a new estate development, you're going to have low capital growth. And the reason for that is that there's more supply than there is demand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for example, if you get a development and the developer's got 1,000 lots that he's trying to sell and all of that kind of stuff. So typically where you see house and land packages, the reality is you're probably not going to get any capital growth for the next 5 to 10 years, right? Simple.
Yeah.
So the same kind of thing goes with the new social housing estates. However, what that also does is that stimulates jobs. So you've got to look at how that affects the local economy, because that's going to stimulate jobs in the construction sector and all of that kind of stuff.
Spot on. Yep.
So you can actually see, realistically, you're not going to be investing in the social housing estates anyway. So but just to understand what the economics of it are, you can actually see those having a huge impact on the local communities.
Mm.
Now, when you're looking at an established area, like an existing suburb with the existing estates and all of that kind of stuff, what we've typically seen is you'll get better rental returns and stronger capital growth when you have a public housing percentage or a social housing percentage of less than 15% in a specific street. Okay. So it's not to say, And that's kind of one of the equations that we look at.
Yeah. Cause there's a lot of places around, like even where I'll grew up on the Central Coast, where a lot of suburbs where you'll have a lot of private, but then there will be a mix of social housing. Like just say you got one street, right? You might have 10 houses and two of them might be social housing, and then that might be blanketed out throughout an estate.
Yeah, and that's basically fine, right? And so it's not to say that's an issue. Mm. When you start to see if like the public housing is clustered too tightly and it's like say 60, 70, 80% public housing in a street, that's when you start to see it impacting capital growth pretty significantly. So that's just something you need to be on the lookout as an investor.
Yeah, yeah. And talking about investing, right? So have you ever had people come up to you and go, "Hey Goose, why should I invest in bricks and mortar? Why is that so special compared to if I wanted to throw money into another market? I'm thinking of stocks, shares, bonds, all that sort of stuff." So
that's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's such a good question. Okay. So let's just make up a scenario, right? Let's say you've got $100,000. Let's just say you've got 100,000 cash and you're like, you've saved up and you're like, "I want to create a better future for me, my family. I want to do all the good stuff. I don't want to have to work forever," all of that stuff. Okay. What am I going to do with my 100 grand? Should I go invest in real estate? Should I go invest in shares? Now, I'm just going to use simple maths here because just so that we can all understand it. But if we took 100 grand and we put it in shares, and it got a let's just say it got a 5% return, which is fairly, it's pretty average, right? Mm. Let's say it got a 5% return on an index fund or something like that.
Yeah, blue chips or something. Yeah.
Totally. So you got 100 grand, invest it, you get a 5% return. What do you got? 5 grand extra, 105 grand total. Mm. Okay. If you take that 100 grand and invest it in real estate and you buy a $500,000 property and you get a 5% return or 5% capital growth on that, you've actually made a $25,000 return.
Mm.
So you actually got a 5x return.
Yeah, right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
And this is one of the big things that people miss, because they're like, oh, but, you know, properties might only go up by 5% or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but it's 5% on top of your leverage. So to give that some context, right? So that would actually, if you actually had invested $100,000, bought a $500,000 property, it went up by 5%.
Mm.
You didn't get a 5% return. You got a 25% return. So you had 100 grand and you've made 25 grand. That's your return on investment. That's your internal rate of return. So once you start to understand that, it's tremendously powerful. Now, to give you a little...
Yeah, because it's always seemed like, you know, a stable path when it's got to do with bricks and mortar. But it's good, like, hearing it from yourself, just the intricacies of what really goes on with the percentages and how you can best elevate that compared to throwing some money at whatever index on the stock exchange.
Totally, 100%. So as I said earlier, like the average growth that we get over a 12-month period for our clients is about 15%. Okay, mm-hmm. that's better than most stocks, right? You get the odd ones that are like 40%ers and stuff like that. But to be honest, they're rare and they're typically volatile, right? So mm-hmm. we're getting 15% growth. So you take your $100,000 and you buy $500,000 property. I'll just do the math right now because I think it's, and then I'm going to talk about something else that's going to blow your mind too. So 500,000 times 0.15, $75,000, right? So you put $100,000 into a property that goes up by 15% in 1 year, you've actually made a 75% return,
which is that's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. The best one that we've done in the last 12 months. I guarantee you're not going to believe me when I say this. You're probably going to think I'm a liar, okay? But we actually had to go and get professional valuations to prove it. 291% return on investment. 291% return on investment. So
come on now.
I know, right? It sounds ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying that's normal. That's definitely not normal. That's completely abnormal. But
yes,
that's what can happen. Now, it's all well and good. Let's just stick with the $500,000 example, right? So let's just say you got 15% return on your 15% growth, right? So that's buy it for $500,000. It's worth $75,000 more in 12 months' time. That's great. But here's the kicker. If you have positive cash flow with that as well. So if that asset produces more income than it uses, it's going to do two things. Firstly, you're not going to have any holding costs, so you're not going to have any stress. So if you go on holidays, you leave your job, or you do anything like that, it's still going to be doing what it needs to do in the background. Happy days. Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep.
Secondly, it's going to be paying down its own debt, right? So what that does is actually increases your return on investment even more, because you no longer have, let's just say, $400,000 of debt, $100,000 purchase, $500,000, like, you know, you don't have $400,000 worth of debt. You've got an asset which is starting to pay itself down, and it's going to have, let's say $395,000 worth of debt, and then $390,000. And this gets down, this goes down. So then your return on investment goes up. And so it starts to go exponential, which is where it starts to get really fun. But not only that, if it's producing surplus revenue, it's going to allow you to liquidate the capital out of that property and buy another one. Right. So you can start to create a scalable property portfolio. So this whole, like, buy a property, wait 30 years and hopefully retire on it, you can do it in like 7 years.
That's good to hear this. Like, what you're hitting the nail on the head, because I know there's a lot of people out there that are in their first property, but they just don't, like, the hesitation of when to pull the trigger on, not just when, but how. And you're explaining that. So that's great.
Yeah, 100%. And here's the other thing as well. It's like, when you start to get this right, like when you start to understand, and so these are the three principles, right? Cash flow, mm-hmm. growth, and the ability to add value. Now, the ability to add value is, it could be something as simple as doing a cosmetic renovation, or it could be something as complex as doing like a small development, right? But whatever it is, it should be something that you don't have to do straight away. But what it is, it's like a cushion and a safety net. so that if something does go wrong and go sideways, you can go, well, I'll go and add value to it and I'll increase my equity, increase my cash flow. Once you get these three elements working together, it creates what I call a wealth ecosystem, where your cash flow can liquidate your capital and your capital can fund the value add. So you can actually use the property's own equity to pay for the value add, which increases the cash flow and increases the equity. And this creates this.
It's a triangle, but almost in the shape. Yeah, it is a triangle, okay. But a circle. Just it keeps on feeding itself.
You're 100% right. And that's the exact image that I've got for it. It's a triangle, and it's also a circle at the same time because it's a flywheel. Now, here's what you can actually do when you get this right. And this is so much simpler than people. Like, this is not, again, this is not black magic. This is not only for someone who's super special. This is like, man, I've had people buy their first property and start to get these kind of results. People on their seventh property that have never even heard of getting this kind of stuff, right? So this is something that anyone can do. Now, once you get this right, you actually have the freedom to do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So if you know that no matter what happens, like even if you were to disappear for, or like, you know, go sail the world for, you know, 12 months or whatever, you could be wealthier when you get back. You know, like you can actually start to, let's think about it like this. Let's just say you had $2,500 of passive income per month, right? So that's not a lot. That's not like, some people talk about like, oh, I want to have like $200,000 passive income. I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. But like, let's just say you had $2,500 a month.
But you'd rather be want to feed that back in, if you can get it back into the properties and knock them down, or just like that circle, that triangle, that just keeps building it up.
You absolutely can, right? You can keep, that's the fast way of doing it, is to keep spinning that wheel and just spin it faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. That's what happens. However, if you add $2,500 a month passive, you've already got, say, you got 2, 3, 4 properties, something like that. And you just decided, you know what? I'm going to go move to Barcelona. and I'm going to write a book. Right? You can do that. Because guess what? You know, like you could probably go work in a sangria bar for 3 days a week and whatever. Man, your life suddenly can change because you're not going to be strapped to your job anymore because you know that you've got something that's going to give you something. Right?
Yes.
And this is why it's so powerful. And I think this is the big missing piece. I was talking to a guy earlier today, and he was, like most people, thought that the best that you could do with property would be to get 5% capital growth and 4% yield, which is basically going to be negatively geared. Now, this guy's a business owner, and he was like, honestly, why would I want to put money in real estate? Like, it just doesn't seem to make sense. And I'm like, yeah, well, if you're going to do that, it doesn't make sense. But if you follow that flywheel, the Holy Trinity, then it's like, I know people that have started following the Holy Trinity principles.
Right.
Now sold their house, bought a caravan. They're investing all their money in more properties, just like the first one they bought, which got a $19,000 of cash flow.
Yeah.
And now they're just like, all right, cool. We're just taking the family on the road. Life's good. Done.
Jesus. So this flywheel, right? So talk us through Dashdot. Like this is what I've been really intrigued about. Like with yourself, what's involved in there? Talk about where the flywheel comes into the context of Dashdot and what you can do for the general public, mate, and especially in a time like now.
Totally. So I think there's a couple of things there. I can talk about what we do. That's fine. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that I think right now, though, and one of the big messages that I just want to try and get through to anyone is that as humans, we have a propensity to always look for the excuse to justify inaction. We always seek out some kind of validation that tells us that doing nothing is the right thing, right? Because it's a lot easier to be, it's a lot safer to be stagnant than it is to be wrong. And so a lot of people just don't want to try and do anything. So, right now, I think a lot of people, you know, if you go back to the start of the year, it was like, oh, I can't, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to take action in my life. It doesn't have to be with property. Like, it can be with anything. We'll talk generally. I don't want to take action in my life. Oh, because I've heard the coronavirus is coming and the world's going to end. Okay. Then the coronavirus came and then they're like, oh, I don't want to take action now because I hear that the economy is going to collapse. We're going into a recession, and come July, the world's going to end. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then we sort of got to July and it was like, hang on a second. Oh, I'm not going to do anything now because come September, the world's going to end. Okay. So now we're nearly at September. Well, I'm not going to do anything now because in March, the world's going to end. And this is the lie that people keep telling themselves, right? Mm. So one message I've got, I don't care if you invest in real estate, you want to do it, we can help you out. And it's so much more fun and more powerful than you probably thought. Mm. The reality is, I don't care what you want to do. You just got to get off your ass and take action, right? Nothing is going to change the world more than motivated people, okay? And motivated people need to get out there and start making impact. My goal is to transform as many human lives as possible by opening and expanding their understanding of what their own potential is. I just happen to use real estate as a vehicle to do that. Okay.
That's great. Yep.
So that's my first message. Just whatever you're going to do, do something. Don't wait. Now, what we do specifically to help our clients, we're a fairly small company. Because what we do is very specialized, we only take on like 10 clients at a time.
Yep.
And the typical general process is really simple.
But it sounds like a lot's going on. Like, yeah, you got 10 clients, but then like you're saying, one of them's got a 25 house, you know, or whatever development portfolio. So that's a bit that you got to assess and take on there. That's for sure.
Yeah, totally. It's pretty simple though. It's fun, right? We've built processes around this. What we do is someone comes to me, they book in a time with me or the team, and they say, hey, I'm here and I want to go to here. Awesome. Then we work out what's going to be the plan to get them there. That's step one, work out the plan. Step two, we go and do all the work. We find the properties. We give you the result. Step three, you live a better life. It's that simple, right? And so what we do is we've got a process that all of the properties we buy follow the Holy Trinity principles, okay? So that triangle, the flywheel. Every single one must follow those principles.
Yep.
Secondarily to that, there's three phases of every single property portfolio journey: foundation, acceleration, and legacy. We understand how to identify where people are in that sequence so they buy the right properties in the right order so they don't make a mistake. Because if you buy the wrong property at the wrong time, you can make just as big a mistake. You know, imagine if you went out and tried to do a 25 townhouse development in your first go.
It's not that, well, you can try as best as you can, but you're going to fall short in a lot of areas, that's for sure.
At the very least, even if you're successful, it's going to be damn stressful, right?
That's right.
And we want to try and take all that stress out of it and make it a lot easier. Really, at the end of the...
Yeah, especially in a time now when, you know, people are going to be hesitant to pull the trigger up with Corona and everything else going on.
Totally, 100%. I mean, here's just the facts of the matter. It's like you look around the country right now and 12 out of 15 macro markets, so that's capitals and regionals, 12 out of 15 of the market differentiations have gone up in value. 12 out of 15. So like, I don't know, there's nothing wrong with buying right now. It's going to go buy in the right spot. I'll actually tell you right now, it's harder for me to buy properties for our clients than ever before because the property market's going too fast. Like, honestly, everyone talks about it being like a buyer's market, which means that buyers have all the power, and it's just not that. It's just not true. It is literally just not true. It's just not true. I mean, it's a seller's market at the moment. Properties are selling for 20% higher than they normally would. It's crazy. Jesus. And so I would suggest that it's more important than ever to make sure you get the right advice and get the right guidance and particularly build the right team, which is obviously what we aim to do and help people. And you're right. You know, what we do in the back end is very complex, but what we do on the front end is simplify the whole wealth creation process for people.
And it doesn't matter what state or territory in, like you gauge that market risk, you know, risk mitigation to whatever degree, and then just look at where you can interject.
Pretty much. So we've built you mentioned algorithms earlier, right? So we've actually built a complex system, which allows us to, we don't look for properties first. Here's one of the mistakes that a lot of people make is they go, I want to go and buy a property. And then they start looking for properties, which kind of makes sense, right? Except it's completely the backwards way around of doing it.
Right.
You want to look at properties last. We don't start by looking at houses. We start by looking at a macroeconomic environment. Mm-hmm. And we've got 8 specific layers of research that we go through to identify the right place at the right time. So as I say, we've been buying in 5 different states, but that doesn't mean we buy anywhere and just like hope for the best. We like pin down, like right now, we've pinned it down to there's only four suburbs that we're buying in right now in the whole country. Four suburbs. And that's it. Jesus. Now, the only way we can get to that is by having a very well-defined process. Now, that's
I was going to say well-defined, that algorithm, and not just the algorithm, but the people power lot with yourself and looking over the market, that's really narrowing in to make sure you know your clients are going to get the best outcomes there.
Totally. It's basically a funnel. It takes it from roughly about 250,000 properties which are on the market at any given point in time, and it literally goes from 250,000 down to one, and so you're only left with the right result.
Simple. Yeah. People listen to this fella. He knows what he's doing. So if you want to grow in the property market, Goose McGrath, you know, get a hold of him. But I want to also touch on, mate, with because what I get involved in too, like with myself with work. So I'm an NDIS service provider.
Yep.
So, and I get mixed in specialist disability accommodation and supported independent living. So, and have you been involved in that scene or had anybody approach you? Or
I have.
Okay.
So I haven't been involved in it, but I've had a lot of people approach me about it, and they've approached me about it because they've usually got the contacts and the contracts for those kind of programs. But then they're like, Goose, you know how to find the properties better than anyone else. So they asked me to try and find the properties. The reason that we haven't actually done any of those projects though, is because the where they want to do those projects don't align with the way we define our ideal areas.
Yeah. Okay.
We haven't had that. Like, I'm like, okay, so we could, for example, do an NDIS project over there, but our process tells us that we don't want to be over there. We want to be over here. So we haven't actually had those two things marry up, but I think it's a really great scheme for a variety of reasons. I think it's a really great scheme for the users. I think it's a really great scheme for the investors. I think it's a really good government strategy. I'm very pro NDIS and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's good to know, because it is, you know, a very good strategy. And at the end of the day, and with what's going on now with COVID, and they don't want people in aged care facilities, and it's just trying to get people that, you know, it'd be someone, say, like me. I'm a C5, C6 incomplete quadriplegic, and I'm 35 years old, and I'm mixing it up with all these old folk in a dementia ward in an aged care facility. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I should be able to be my own property. And if it's either living with, you know, family, partner, wife, husband, or another person with a disability. So, and that's what specialist disability accommodation or SIL set up for underneath the scheme. And there's all different avenues of why people with disabilities should be in appropriate housing, but that's a massive market within itself. And, you know, it'd be good to, and like with myself, just putting it out there. So, to do with special, like what I'm residing in right now and I'm speaking out of is my property. And I was the first, because I found, and it's underneath the legislation, I was the first, because I'm a builder and carpenter by trade before I was in a wheelchair. So, and I found out I was the first SDA provider to themselves, like as someone with a disability.
That's awesome.
In the country, you know, I'm like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. So, and then that's where I really try and empower, you know, because I want the best, I want tangible outcomes for people with disability. And that's where I try and branch out and find housing solutions, you know, if people want to build themselves or if they want to get in the mix and get in with other people, with developers or whatever it may be, because, you know, it's really important. At the end of the day, everybody, if they've got a disability or not, should have a roof over their heads, mate. So
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's, and that's actually one of the biggest issues that I see across the country at the moment, is that we've got a housing shortage.
That's it. That's,
you know, there's a housing shortage driven. There shouldn't be people on the streets.
No.
You know, and housing is a human right, not a luxury. Now, I mean, investment, yeah, great, but that doesn't mean that I'm some bigwig that hates people. It's like, nah, man, there should be more houses for more people. Like,
there's a community
out there that we need to protect.
That's it. And that's what I did, mate. Like, with one of my clients, like, where he was homeless in the industrial area, like, in a part of Australia, and now he's, you know, living in a new home and house. And, you know, that's what's important. But, mate, Goose, I know you're a busy man and you've got some meetings coming up, but I want to just put out, you know, very much appreciated for yourself coming on. I really want to have another yarn with you down the line, but I want you to put out there, how can people get a hold of you? If it's through your company, social media, throw it out in the atmosphere, brother.
There's a lot of different ways, right? But what I'd probably suggest, if you're listening to this or watching this, you probably like podcasts, and I've got a podcast too. And if you want to learn all about all of this stuff, and if you really want to spin the wheels and start to make all this happen and expand your knowledge, head to theinvestorlab.com.au, listen to my podcast, do all that kind of stuff. There's free resources there that'll tell you exactly what to do and how to do it. You can go and do it yourself. We haven't tried to keep this secret. We're trying to educate people as well. On top of that, you can get a copy of my book, right? So my book is called Limitless, The Renegade's Guide to Building Wealth Through Property. I highly recommend that for anyone who is at any stage of their property investing journey, just starting, 10 properties deep, don't care. It's going to change your life and change the way you think about property. To get that, you can just get that from theinvestorlab.com.au as well. And there's even a way to contact me there. So just head there. That's pretty much all you need to do. Investorlab.com.au. Check it out. And it's got everything you need to get ahead in property and in life.
Boom. You heard the man. That's how you get a hold of him. Plenty of resources and knowledge. If you want to get in the market, contact Goose and get amongst it. Goose McGrath, much appreciated, brother. And look forward to having another yarn down the line. Cheers.
Thanks, mate. It was a really great chat. I really appreciate being on here. So thanks so much for your time.
Awesome.
Speak soon.
See, folks, Goose McGrath at Dash Dot, getting people to make sound choices in their property portfolios. Great investment, spreading the love, building legacies. Doing great stuff, brother. Keep it up. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at StreetRollingCheetah or email one word, StreetRollingCheetah@gmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. And I want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, we'll see you on the next one.